This is an iHeart podcast.
Whatever team Fia is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, your house smells. Don't get mad. Don't get mad. My house smells too. I'm not indicting you. I'm sure you keep a clean home, but just time means you're going to acquire smells, whether those are cooking smells that get in your paint, your carpet, maybe they're animal smells, maybe you're a smoker or someone else was. Just living creates smells. I didn't realize that my home had a smell to it until I got my first Eden Pure Thunderstorm, the greatest air purifier I've ever owned in my life. This thing, I had it plugged in for 2 hours. I came back in the room and my air smelled so clean. I now own 3 of them. I'm not making that up. This thing has absolutely changed me on top of what it's done for my allergies. Go get one. Get 2. Be like me and get 3. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $10 off and free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com, promo code Jesse.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
I want you to picture a concrete man-made cave in the side of a little hill. There's a canal running into this cave. This canal, we'll call it 4 feet deep, runs clear down into the cave. The canal is full of water. The water is electrified. You are thrown onto a boat, driven down said canal into this dark, dank cave. On your left are various concrete rooms. Concrete rooms stuffed to the max full of people. They drive you down on the boat The lights are flickering. You're only catching glimpses of the people in the cages with their faces pressed against the bars. In many cases, reaching out. They park the boat in front of one of these rooms. Cattle prod everybody back off of the gate. And stuff you into the room and slam the gate closed. You can't breathe. There was originally a ventilator in the room, some ventilation, an air duct. They actually sealed that off too. The room smells like sweat and blood and poop. And the guy beside you asks in the weakest voice humanly possible if you would be willing to throw him into the electrified water the next time they open the gate so he can die. Let's have a talk before we get back to that about Uganda. About creating colonies, colonization, colonial powers. The goods, the bads, let's have a little chat. Africa, I find to be an extremely fascinating place. I've obviously never been. I shouldn't say obviously, I've never been. I want to go. Full disclosure, I really want to go on a safari, and at the risk of sounding like a big hippie, I don't necessarily want to kill anything. Granted, I grew up hunting and fishing. It's not that I'm anti-hunting or anything like that. I don't know what it is, but I don't have a huge desire to kill any of the, or very many of the African animals. Like, I'd kill a Cape buffalo. There's tons of them. They're big, ugly, dangerous. It would be exciting. And I'm not judging you if that's your thing at all. I just don't want to kill an elephant. I don't want to kill a giraffe. The only reason I would want to kill a lion is I want a lion coat to wear around in day-to-day life to scare the daylights out of everybody. But I want to see it. And what's funny about Africa as a continent is we, as Americans, we tend to just call it all Africa as if it's one country. It's just one thing over there. I don't know. There's some beautiful animals. There's a lot of genocide and some weird tribes. There are actually individual countries in Africa. But we look, and look, I'm not judging you either. I do it. Again, what we talk about all the time on the show is true. You're not a bad person if you simplify things. And if your mind works in a way to simplify things so they're easily digestible to you, that doesn't make you a bad person. Look, a quick side note example for me. We can go visit my wife's huge extended family at a gigantic family reunion, which we've done so before. Fun time, campsite, lake, you know, horseshoes, kids playing, swimming, the normal little, you know, little lake cabin. Wake up, grill some bacon in the morning, so on and so forth. We can have this long, week-long excursion where we road trip there in lake, and we meet all 80 people, and we take off, and the wife will ask me 2 years later, "Oh, did you hear Diane is sick?" And I'll say, "Who's Diane?" And she'll just look at me just with her jaw hanging open. And she'll say, "That," and I don't know if she has a cousin like this, I'm making this up, "That's my cousin. We hung out with him for 3 days." And I'm all, "Oh, well, I don't remember that, but do you remember when we ate at Charlie's Diner on that trip? It was a great trip. They had the double cheeseburger where they had the special sauce on," and she'll just storm off. Now, I am a bad person, but that doesn't make me a bad person. I prioritize food in my life. That's what I take away from things. I get it, honestly. My old man is the same way. He's traveled a bunch in the country. He can't tell you that much about anywhere he's been. My old man, to this day, can tell you where to eat every place he's been and what to order when you get there. He can. Now, we're specialists in that regard. As I've told you before, if we ever go out to dinner, if you're lucky enough to go out to dinner with me, I will probably even tell you, just order what I order, and you'll be fine. I did it with Chris, producer Chris, and personal assistant Josh the other day, or Josh Mitchell the other day. I guess phone screener Mitchell now. 877-377-4373 is the number, by the way. 877-377-4373. I ordered them lunch. I was hungry. We decided we were going to DoorDash some tacos or something like that. I didn't even ask them what they wanted. I just ordered what I ordered. Chris, how was it? Right? Right? I've got you covered. Anyway, I don't know how I got sidetracked on that. It's history time. Quit distracting me. Don't feel bad. Don't feel like the ugly American. Don't feel racist. Don't feel anything else if you just kind of lump all of Africa with Africa, but also understand, while you shouldn't feel bad, understand that it is complicated. It's a lot more complicated than that. And remember, in the colonial period, which is a several century-long period, if we're being honest, powerful nations. We're mainly talking, frankly, about Britain, France, Russia to an extent. Powerful nations would find poorer, well, there's no question, I don't even have to use that tone of voice, poorer nations, less developed nations technologically, universally tribal nations, and they would take over. Now, sensibilities change as we move throughout the ages. I'll explain what I mean in a sec. Do you still have a traditional IRA, a traditional 401k, sitting there with your stocks and your bonds? Do you even know about a precious metals IRA? Do you even know how safe they are, how much more secure your finances can be with a precious metals IRA from Birch Gold? Again, you don't have to take my word for it. You can go get a 20-page kit free of charge. It shows how gold and silver can protect you, can protect the things you've worked hard for your whole life. There is so much uncertainty out there right now. Why in the world are you gambling with how you're going to retire one day? That's your livelihood. Those are meals. Go to birchgold.com/Jesse. That's birchgold.com/Jesse. Get your free kit today.
Jesse Kelly returns next.
When I say sensibilities change through the ages, just understand this. It's not that they always go one way. More brutal, more harsh, to more enlightened. They kind of go up and down. We're used to a one trajectory on that. Everything is kinder and gentler and more tolerant, and has been so, frankly, for a few hundred years. That is not always the case. It rises and it falls. Very much so. When it comes to colonizing, and I'm not judging Britain or France for this, we did the same thing in America. Again, I'm not judging us either. I'm not one of these, we're these evil colonizers. That's what you did. You got to some fresh land. You expanded. You found a way to join with and or flat out conquer the people who are currently living there. If they were strong enough, they fought you off. If they weren't, they got conquered. That's the history of the world. I don't blame the Indians for fighting against it. I don't blame America for doing it. I don't take sides in all that. I love them both. I find the tribes to be fascinating. I find this one-way history that we have, where we only, the evil American colonizers and the glorious, noble savage who would never harm an ant's leg because they're all harmonious with part of Mother Earth. Shut up, idiots. They were all slaughtering each other all the time. I'm not judging them either. That's what they did too. The strong ruled the weak. The stronger tribes pushed out the weaker tribes. That's fine. It's fine. I love the warrior peoples, the Comanche. The Comanche were horrible. Total brutal. I love them. They're my favorites. They're pretty much my favorites. So again, I don't approach history in that way. And I find, even while I was researching today's show, I find the way people approach it to be nauseating. But I'll get to that in a minute. And through the ages, 15, 16, 1700s, colonization by a powerful nation over a weaker nation was a bit more of a straightforward, brutal process. Think we've talked about it before. Cortez conquering the Aztecs is really more what we're doing. I have great news, everybody. You are now the subject of the King of Spain. That is awesome for you. Congratulations. These gods of yours, yeah, those are all demons and they're going to go. Congrats, you're all Christians. If you disagree with any of this, I will murder you all. Good news, right? And that's really how it went. A bit straightforward. And here's the funny thing about that, and this is easy to say for me because I'm not the father of an Aztec family who's getting ready to be burned at the stake by a Spaniard. I like straightforward. If we're going to be enemies, I much prefer you just come out with it. I don't mind that at all. Obviously, as you can imagine, because of my forward approach, I guess we could call that, Chris, frank approach, rude, some might even say, many might even say, I have a million enemies. But that doesn't bother me in the least. At least most of them are honest about it. I hate Jesse Kelly. I wish he was gone. Fine. I get that. I'm not for everybody. I'm definitely not for everybody. I don't mind straightforward. However, as these nations began to get a little less severe, academics would call it a little more enlightened, you had to essentially do the same thing, march in, take over, be in charge, but you had to do it and cover it up a little bit more than you used to. It's no longer, we're seizing this for God and country. Now it's, we're helping you out. We're here for you. And that is a lot of what you see when it comes to Africa. Specifically, when it comes to Britain and Uganda. Britain moves into Uganda, 1900-ish. And, that's not that long ago. And here's the problem so much of the time you run into when you're trying to colonize an area or a nation. is oftentimes, we ran into this all the time with the Indians. People have run into this when they're colonizing tribal peoples forever. We lump them all together. In the same way, all of Africa, it's just Africa, even though there's tons of different countries there, tons of different cultures, good, bad, it's tons of it. You do the same thing in a specific area that you've decided. I think it was Boganda or Bogota. I forget what it was when Britain moved in. We just decided, oh, these people. Oh, well, we're in charge of you people now. Well, there's not necessarily a you people. There's a bunch of different tribes. And even tribes often that speak the same language or have the same customs freaking hate each other. It's divided. It's complicated. It's complicated. As always, how often do we say that on the show? It's complicated. But life is messy. This is certainly not Britain's first rodeo when it comes to colonizing somebody, and they march into Uganda and they start doing it in a more kinder, gentler way. You gotta kill some people. That's inevitable. But part of what you do as far as being kinder and gentler when it comes to a place like Uganda, as we talked about the other day, you start building schools. You know what? Your military, little ragtag. Time to set down the spears. Here, we'll show you how to... Well, here's a uniform. Here's how to stand in formation. Here's how to drill. Here's how to shoot a weapon. Now, I'm not going to sit here also and be an apologist for Britain either. It's not as if all of Uganda was like, woohoo, finally, we got some modernization up in this place. They chafed on that, as people do. Some of them. Again, complicated. Some of them did not. Colonization oftentimes brings out extreme haves and have-nots of the people who were already there. There are many, many, many Ugandans, once Britain rolled in, who saddled up alongside the Brits and made an amazing life for themselves by doing so. There are several Ugandans, either by choice or otherwise, who were on the outside looking in, and they went from having a real nice, peaceful tribal life to living in a shanty on the outskirts of some, quote, modern city. Haves and have-nots. I'm not insulting anybody, any country, any system. We just look at history as it is on this show. Which leads me to this. Before I get to our actual story today, which I somehow have still not gotten to yet a half hour into the show, it leads me to this. I despise the education system in the Western powers today. When I'm looking up the story of a monster, the butcher of Uganda, Idi Amin, which is what we're going to be talking about today, do you have any idea how many apologies on behalf of the Ugandan people and absolute insults towards the British people you have to wade through in the textbooks and podcasts and things like that? It's brutal. Gosh. Hang on. Knocked out yet another good night of sleep last night. Did you? You know, you can stop hearing me talk about that every day on the radio and start experiencing it yourself if you just go get an ebb sleep. Look, I know why you can't sleep. It's the same reason I can't sleep. I lay down, and it doesn't have to be bad stress. It doesn't have to be bad thoughts. It can be good thoughts. I'm excited about tomorrow's show or something. But for whatever reason, I can't turn my mind off. I lay down and I got things on my brain when I need to be sleeping. And then what happens? You know what happens. The bad thoughts, the things keeping you awake, they just keep stacking on each other and stacking on each other, and soon you're up all night. And ebb sleep calms those thoughts down. Go to tryeb.com/Jesse. That's tryebb.com/Jesse. Use the promo code Jesse. Get $25 off. Now, as you're researching anything involving Africa, or this, I mean, Idi Amin, who we're about to go into today, is, it's hard to put things into lists and rankings, but he's on your list somewhere of the most horrible people who's ever lived. And even looking into Idi Amin in Uganda and what he did there, you can't wait. You have to wade through 50% of the and understand how oppressed they were and understand they only got this kind of an idea from the British. And the he would never have done this if it wasn't for the British. And oh my gosh, just tell the story, man. There is this white guilt infection in our world. And I don't know who it's more insulting to, white people or black people. Just tell the story of history, man. That's it. Tell the story. That's all. You know who's been racist throughout the history of the world? Everybody. Everyone. That is man's fallen nature, part of it. Tribalism, grouping up. For whatever reason, religion, race, my people are better than your people are inferior, your people are dumber, your people are shorter, your people are, that's the history of mankind, man. This infection in the West, where the West has made such a brighter planet, yet feels bad about having made such a brighter planet, is the oddest thing in the world. And what's crazy is you'll have countries like Russia today. How much death and misery and destruction has Russia spread across the planet? Russia never apologizes for being Russia. When's the last time you heard a Russian say anything to that effect? Well, I mean, this really was our fault as we oppressed these poor downtrodden. They never do that. Russia's all, screw you, we're Russia. Brits roll in, take over Uganda. Remember, Britain fights a horrific war in World War I, horrific for Britain. Keep in mind, Britain and France lost significantly more people in World War I than they did in World War II. We think of World War II more because of the Nazis and the Holocaust, and it was a grander scale. We were more involved, but for specific countries, World War I was by a mile the worst thing that ever happened to them. Ever. And when you're a colonial power like Britain, here's what happens. You roll into Uganda, especially in the kinder, gentler period. Yes, you're in charge. Yes, you have veto power. You put in your puppet rulers, but you are providing things. You are providing goods and services. You are providing an elevated standard of living for many people. You are, without question, in every single case, you are providing protection. They call it a protectorate. You are Big Brother. I can slap you around. I can do this. I can do that to Uganda if I'm Britain. Oh, no, 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 no. You don't get to do that to Uganda if you're Kenya or someone else. No, 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 no. We're Britain. You mind your own business or you will feel our wrath. The problem for these countries when they get in these massive World War I conflicts is, for at least a while, you're not providing that protection because you don't have the resources to do so. And there are plenty of people in Uganda who can rise up and will rise up against you if you aren't there helping. So Britain goes through that in World War I, and that's an issue. Then World War II comes along. And Britain, this is really, really where Britain lost its empire because it was just too much money. They were stretched too thin. In several of its major places across the world, their countries were getting slapped around. And for the first time, Britain, there wasn't a British fleet on the horizon coming to save the day. Well, if you're my colonial big brother and you're not providing protection anymore, then you can pretty much go F yourself. And when you combine that with now we've really entered an enlightened age, now we've entered an age worldwide post-World War II, do you think there was a bit of a worldwide turnoff when it comes to occupying another country in any way? Oh, there was. Britain, France, everybody starting to look a little hypocritical when you fight a world war against Adolf Hitler for invading everybody, and there are still British troops in Uganda. Britain still calling the shots in Uganda. So after that, the clock was ticking. Now, let us begin with Idi Amin. Born dirt poor, and I do mean dirt poor, in the 1920s, I believe. They say his mother was a witch doctor and that it gets complicated. We don't know what year he was born. He was born in a tribe. He was not born in a place where they issued official birth certificates. And the thing is, you have no idea when you hear witch doctor stories like that if they're true or not. Because let's be honest, there were plenty of witch doctors over there at the time. She easily could have been. But also, you're also dealing with the people who write the histories of it. And we like to look at all, well, I mean, it's an African dude with a bunch of weird stuff in his face. It's probably a witch doctor. So you never know what to believe. And then Idi Amin, later on, when he came to power, would they always boost up their upbringing in a way that makes them look better. So maybe he said it and it wasn't true. You just don't know. Whatever. They say it was. We know he was born poor. We know he was born to a witch doctor. We know at one point in time, he found himself as what they call a hat and coat man at a Ugandan hotel. Now, remember, this is still the era where Britain is in charge there. And how Britain was doing its thing then across the world was this. They don't want really British troops en masse in a place like Uganda because the Ugandan people are already chafing at that. A bunch of British people, a bunch of white people ruling a black Ugandan nation. Not judging the Ugandan people for that. Again, understandable. This is our place. So that what they would do is they'd try to thread that needle and they would create essentially a Ugandan army led by British officers. That way, somebody rebels, you got trouble in the countryside, you're not sending a bunch of British troops out there to go crack heads, which hurts your standing in the nation. You're sending a bunch of Ugandan troops out there. There just happens to be a British dude in charge. You see what I mean? Threading that needle? We're in charge, but I mean, you're really in charge. And I mean, we're going to put down your rebellion. I mean, they're going to put down your rebellion. We're just going to help them along. It's complicated. Hang on. We'll be right back. Idi Amin grew up dirt poor. Gets a job as a hat and coat man in a hotel. And you know the scene, right? Something straight out of the movies. Who's going to frequent a nice hotel in Uganda? British officers, Brits who were there. British officer in the army gets to know Idi Amin, and you should know this about Idi Amin. One, he's gigantic, like 6'4", 240. He's big. He's a big dude. Two, wildly charismatic. And I mean wildly charismatic. Everybody said so, to a man. So if you have this big, wildly charismatic dude you get to know as a hat and coat man, you're a British Army officer, you get to thinking to yourself, this is probably somebody who will be of use to me. He gets him into the army, again, the Ugandan army that's led by British officers. Idi Amin is stuck in the laundry at first, but begins to work his way up through the ranks. And even in his youth, Idi Amin was a violent human being. Used to childhood fights as, you know, in the village. Childhood fights, friends used to have to pull him off in fist fights because he would try to kill whoever he would fight. This is a man who loves violence. He loves violence so much. Remember I said he was big and strong? He's also athletic. Became a competitive swimmer and became the heavy... Again, history's so funny why you can't get a straight answer on anything. Heavyweight or light heavyweight, depending on what you read, boxing champion of Uganda while he was in. This dude can handle himself. There gets to be... That Kenya is right next door to Uganda. I should have laid this out because people weren't looking at a map. You're looking in Africa, about the center of Africa on the far east side on the water. You'll see Kenya. And then if you move inland, move west, right beside Kenya is Uganda. They got a border. All right? There's some tension there historically. Kenya decided they were going to tangle with Uganda. I'm not going to get into all the details of that. It doesn't matter. They send Idi Amin and a bunch of Ugandan troops over there, and Idi Amin once again has a knack for violence. One British commander I saw in a documentary about him, he was Idi Amin's British officer in charge, talked about a night ambush where Idi Amin was in the front of it. A Kenyan tried to hack his head off with a machete. The Kenyan regretted that decision for about 5 seconds of the remainder of his life. Idi Amin was violent and capable in combat. And right about now, the British Army begins to notice something about this young man. Big, violent, charismatic, a little brutal, even for these times, even for rough times in Uganda, a little brutal. But is that a bad thing if you're in the British Army? He's in your force, right? I will tell you, remember how I got forced to be a military police officer for about 6 months? They pulled me out of the infantry and made me be a cop. And I was the dirtiest cop in the world. Now, not screwing people over, but I would turn on my lights to drive through red lights and everything else. I'd leave my buddies tickets, and they would say terrible things on them. I'd pull over my friends on the way out of town. They had a video system, again, in the car that faced forward and backwards. And if you elevated above a certain speed, it would record you, and then they would show the commander of your watch what you did, and I would hit it on purpose so it would start recording me and record these stupid little diary videos just so I'd get screamed at the next day. I was essentially trying to get kicked out, and yet they kept promoting me, so I ended up being in charge of the watch several times. Why? Because I was good at If there was something rough, I was somebody you would want there. We had a call one night. Some dude was going crazy, got a hold of a razor blade in the hospital on base, was trying to hurt the nurses. I was the one they called. We went ahead and got that problem handled. He ended up having to stay in the hospital for a little while. When you're in the military, as long as it's properly channeled, you do not look down on violence. And nor should you. I'm not judging, nor should you. We like to imagine, or I should say you do, I don't, some of you do, like to imagine that our men and women in uniform, especially our spec ops dudes, or our infantry Marines, somebody like that, Army Rangers, you like to imagine they're all Captain America, right? Perfect teeth. And they all say, yes, ma'am. And my word, I would never disrespect a lady. And then, of course, I would. These guys are rough, man. These guys are rough. And you want them rough. Believe me, you do. Life's imperfect. Hang on. HomeTitleLock.com. Do you know what they did to kind of show me how dangerous it is out there? I'm telling you, it was creepy and revealing to me. Before we had our first meeting, they had somebody who works for them gather my information that's available online. I did not give them this information. This is just information that's out there, and I'm pretty careful online. Before our meeting, they sent me a copy of a completely real-looking home title with my wife, her signature, and my signature on the document. Home title theft, people taking out loans against the title of your home, is a major crime. The FBI is majorly concerned, and it can financially ruin you. Go to HomeTitleLock.com right now. Use the code Jesse. Get yourself 30 free days of protection. He had a knack for violence. And so when you're the Brits, remember how I said you want to send Ugandans, really, to put down anything that goes on within the borders of Uganda? Some rebels popped up within the borders of Uganda. And they really, really did not like British rule. They began to rustle cattle. They began to do some ugly, ugly things in the countryside. And you're the Brits, and you need to take care of this problem. But, I mean, we can't do it. And you have this violent young man. And so they said, Idi Amin, there's some cattle rustling going on. Would you mind going and getting this problem handled? And they didn't necessarily give him too many specifics, as you wouldn't want to do. Go handle the problem. Idi Amin, very happy being in the military, having a little money to spend, being able to do violence. Idi Amin said, oh yeah, I got you covered. And he really had it covered.
Jesse Kelly Show. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
So you send out Idi Amin to put down a little rebellion. You're going to get Idi Amin doing Idi Amin things. He sends out the word immediately. Anybody else caught rustling cattle or causing problems will have his penis cut off. Idi Amin is not a man who sends out warnings like that without meaning them. He begins capturing people who are rustling cattle and not only removing their manhood from their bodies, burying them alive after he does so. Now, this would be the point. Remember, we're not in 1750 here. This is the mid-1900s. We have telephones. We have pictures. We have the ability to send information around the world immediately. Cutting way down on the brutality. So this word is getting out. There's somebody cutting off penises. But Britain's in a bit of an awkward spot, aren't they? I mean, the job got done, didn't it? So nobody, again, once again, nobody slaps this guy on the wrist for doing the things he loves to do. Violence. The man loves violence. Finally, the Brits, because it's just, like I said, post-World War II, it was inevitable, even though this didn't happen till 1960, I believe, somewhere in there. Finally, the Brits decide, okay, we're not in the colonial game anymore. Uganda, have Uganda. You're all alone. We are gone. We're no longer in charge. Goodbye. Which is nice, right? Except, what are we going into? What period of time are we in right now? 1960. That is the hot and heavy Cold War. And of course, as luck would have it, guess who takes over Uganda? A man named Obote, a card-carrying communist. And Obote, even though he's a card-carrying communist, he's still kind of a gentle dude. Gentle's not the right way to put it. He was still imprisoning and torturing people, like any communist does. Just not necessarily on the massive scale that most communists do. He's more of a politician. You can see a picture of the dude. He looks smaller, gentle, always in a nice suit. He's Obote. And if you're taking over once Britain leaves, you have a lot of work to do. It was celebrated across the country. Of course, woohoo, we're independent. It's our own. It's Ugandans. It's you know, we're no longer ruled by white people. That was a big deal then, which don't blame them. Fine. Good deal. No more Britain. No more white people. We're in charge. However, remember, one of the hardest things in the world when it comes to drugs is coming off of them. When you're a power like this, a country like this, and Big Daddy Britain, who was holding your hand for a long time, and they decide they're going to pack up and leave, there's going to be some hard times ahead because you don't have the guidance of Britain. You're not starting from zero, not at all, because you have enough people in your country with the intelligence and with the education they receive from watching Britain, and many just flat-out trained by Britain to run things, so you have some know-how. It's not as if, whoa, all I know how to do is milk a cow. That's not fair. But you're also not Britain either. And you also don't have the power of the money, the British finances behind you. So if you don't have the power of the money and you can't all of a sudden lay out a bunch of carrots for everybody in your country while you're trying to get your affairs in order, what you will inevitably do is lay out a bunch of sticks. And if you're Mr. Obote and you're more of the gentler type, you need somebody who's really good at laying out the sticks. Who are you going to call? That's right. Mr. Idi Amin. essentially puts him in charge of the military. There are some things that happen in between here and there, but it's, we've gone a little long on this today. My fault. So we're not going to go into all that. But almost immediately, Idi Amin, when he's given charge over military units and eventually the whole military, what comes with that is essentially a military credit card. You have a man who grew up poor, who always wanted to kill people, hurt people. He wanted clothes, women, booze, cars, all the things that come with the wealth and the fame. He almost immediately begins to commit massive amounts of crime, fill up his own bank account, line his military with men loyal to him. And it should also be noted, because he is such an excellent and accomplished military man, his men loved him. The men in the military loved him, and that's going to be important. Now, Idi Amin is smuggling guns, gold, ivory, coffee, you name it. He's one of the biggest criminals in the world at the time, getting filthy rich off it. Obote is well aware of it. However, even though Obote is technically in charge, how much can you really do when Idi Amin has the military behind him? You can't just march in there and arrest him. Who's going to be doing the arresting? Remember this, people. For now and the future, in this country and everyone, at some point in time, in order for something to be enforced, it has to be enforced at the end of a gun. If you can't march in there and get him, then who's really in charge? Finally, Obote decides this has gone far enough. We cannot have this dude running rampant. Plus, I don't trust him at all. Obote had tried to get some of his own men in the military and did, but not many of them. Obote has to go to a conference in Singapore. You know, national leaders always have to take a fancy jet somewhere to a conference here, a fancy hotel, a steak dinner. Let's get to know this guy. Get to know that guy. Hey, let's do some trade agreements. Sounds good. That's the nature of business. That's the nature of world politics. As he leaves town, he issues orders that Idi Amin is to be arrested. But here's the problem. Like I said, who's going to do the arresting? Who do you think gets that order to go arrest Idi Amin? But somebody 100% loyal to Idi Amin walks right into Idi Amin's office and says, look what Obote's trying to do. And Idi Amin says, no, that's not going to happen. Idi Amin, which is funny when you think about it, because he's this violent monster, has a completely bloodless coup, essentially. I mean, there's a little fighting here, a little fighting there. He just takes the military because he owns them all and just essentially walks into the Ugandan version of the Oval Office and sits down and says, hey, guess who's running things now? And who's going to do what about it? Keep in mind, this is 1970-ish. What's the world going through 1970-ish? Still hot and heavy in a Cold War, mired in Vietnam, the United States is. How much do we care about in some Ugandan savage country having a bloodless coup? The answer is not at all. We just don't. We didn't. Not criticizing us. It just wasn't a big deal at the time. We had bigger fish to fry. Idi Amin, and who knows whether he believed this or not, I doubt he did, but in order to calm the fears of the Ugandan people, he steps right up to the microphone and says, whoa, I'm not some dictator. I have no desire to be in charge. I'm a military man. What we're going to do is, give me a minute. We're going to set up some elections so someone else can be in charge. There's even video of him. You can watch it. I watched it last night of him saying, no, I don't want to be in charge. We need to elect a prime minister, and then I'll serve that guy and follow his orders. I'm just a military dude. Don't worry. That kind of went the other way. You have no idea how many dangerous criminals are out there online. It's so funny. We think about, you know, locking our doors at night. Maybe you carry a weapon. Maybe you have an alarm system. Who knows? You always take these precautions, and yet you just sit down and hop online and don't think anything about it. You know those dangerous criminals. You know one of the biggest cyber crimes out there right now is home title theft. Your home title is no longer a piece of paper on a bank safe in a bank safe in the Old West somewhere. It's online. They can get a hold of it. They can get your very real-looking signature on it and take out a large loan against it. And guess who's going to get the bill while they're off sailing in Barbados with your money? Yep. Go to HomeTitleLock.com. That's HomeTitleLock.com. Register your address. You might already be a victim. Use the code Jesse when you get there. 30 free days of protection.
Jesse Kelly returns. Next.
The bloodless coup, the new democracy in Uganda, lasted about 15 minutes. A man like that, a man violent, hungry, power hungry, money hungry, women hungry, is not a man who walks into complete and total power of a dictatorship of a nation and simply says, ah, it's not for me. So instead of the democracy, the free elections, the free everything, kind of goes the other way and instead creates a state police. You know how the state police thing eventually works out? Here's how the state police thing worked out there. You remember that horrific prison in the beginning I told you about? That was real. And if you go to Uganda to this day, it's actually a tourist attraction. You can go tour it. In fact, it's a video. If you'd like an image of what I'm talking about, you can look at video of that little concrete cave. They've removed the water, the electrified water, but you can get yourself a nice little image of those concrete cells, what it would have been like. And Idi Amin turns out to be a monster. An absolute monster. Slaughtering his own people, slaughtering anybody who dissents. Making people angry on the world stage. And as he makes this nation angry, they inevitably turn to a different nation. It's just, it's as ugly as it gets. Idi Amin was never a practicing Muslim, although he was taught the Quran as a child. Apparently he memorized lots of it. But this is not some practicing Muslim. The dude was a drinking, smoking, womanizing beast. Judging the dude, I'm just saying, let's not act like this was some imam here. As soon as the Christian world turns on him, as his atrocities start to come out, he starts to turn to uglier states like Libya. Got to know Omar Gaddafi really well. Starts to get to know Palestine really well. You see Israel started to get aware of what he was doing. You know that concrete cave that got turned into a horrific murder prison? Israel actually built that for him, only they built it as an armory. They had no idea he was going to turn it into torture chambers. And it got worse than that as far as the torture goes. I'm not going to go too deep into it. We're talking about boiling people in water, forcing prisoners to beat each other with hammers. Really, really, really horrible stuff. His torture chambers were famous. The man was a sadistic monster. Sadistic monster. Paranoid. They claim, one of the million claims, and you never know what's true when it comes to these guys, they claim he got syphilis as a young man, which certainly could happen to somebody like that. Well, I mean, obviously it could happen to a lot of people, but still, it could happen. And syphilis, so famously, if untreated, affects your brain. Remember, that's how Al Capone lost it at the end. Had the brain function of a 14-year-old child. It deteriorates your brain, turns you crazy. But the man was nuts and would issue these wild press releases. for some reason loved Scotland, called himself the last king of Scotland, ended up getting in obviously various quibbles with everybody. There's a British journalist who's in the Ugandan nation, and the British journalist begins to write a book about what it's like to live in Uganda. And only like one or two passages were ugly towards Amin. It was not some super anti-Ugandan book. Idi Amin was obviously spying on him, had the man arrested. It was a massive international scandal. The Queen offers to sit down with him. Idi Amin ignores her. Britain, sadly, very sadly, capitulates and sends somebody down there and promises him foreign aid if they release the journalist instead of murdering him. Idi Amin not only killed people in secret, he killed people in these massive public displays by firing squad. It is rumored, they don't know whether or not this is true, that sometimes the lights would go out in the capital, and this is why they would go out, because Idi Amin would dump massive amounts of the dead bodies of people he killed in the river, and the bodies, he dumped so many of them in there, they would get stuck in the hydro plants and zonk out the electricity of the city. Now, I say they don't know the electricity part is true. We do know he fed people to the crocodiles, lots of them. He kept human heads in the freezer. He would invite important people over for state dinners and pull out said human heads and eat with them. A monster. Turns really, really anti-Israel as an appeal to the terrorists and the Soviets and Libya and so on. And eventually, Kenya starts to get really mad about it. The world is mad about it. They want this guy gone. He only lasted about 8-9 years. And the Palestinians, a Palestinian terrorist group, takes a plane hostage. You know, that was the thing they did back in the day that had a bunch of Israelis and Orthodox Jews on it. They take off. They're looking for a place to land. Obviously, you're not going to have a whole lot of takers when you're a terrorist group with a bunch of people hostage. However, Idi Amin was a complete nutcase and said, oh, come on down. I've got an airplane hangar for you. Allows them to land there. They eventually release all the non-Orthodox Jews and non-Israelis. Israel very wisely and their Mossad snatches up all those people, gathers the intel from them on the layout, and they launch Operation Thunderbolt. Highly recommend you look into it. It's really, really cool. Essentially, some super Israel commandos go storming into this Ugandan airport, only lose a few of the 100 or so hostages, slaughter all the terrorists and Ugandans guarding them, take off scot-free. It's one of those awesome hostage rescue stories. It's also pretty much the final straw on the world stage because Idi Amin had already withstood several assassination and coup attempts. And now he looks so weak because he can't even protect some hostages in his own country. Takes off. Takes off. Hunkers down in Libya for a year, and here's the most amazing thing about it. Only lasts a year or so in Libya, eventually gets taken in by our good friends in Saudi Arabia, who pay him a very generous salary and put him up in a very nice home for the rest of his days, where Idi Amin lives until 2003, dies in his 70s. How does that happen? It happens when the world gets so distracted and preoccupied by this thing and that thing and this thing and that thing, that the world doesn't notice or care about a monster growing right underneath its nose. The most amazing thing about what we're seeing right now to me is the Democrat mayors and city councils in these cities, how they're not only not putting down these horrific riots, they're encouraging them. How did we let that happen?
On the Jordan Harbinger Show, you'll hear amazing stories from people that have lived them, from spies to CEOs, even an undercover agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family. You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia, who did just that.
My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good looking young lady. She's serving me a drink. Hey, what would you like? Usually my drink was give me a Kettle One martini, three olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink. The guys come in. I'm going to go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money. Bam, I give her $100. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down, but you're on record with us.
For more on how Jack became so trusted in the highest levels of the Gambino organization, check out episode 392 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart Podcast.